From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
The United States government and a number of the countries in the West prefer military regimes here because it is much, much easier to do business with the military. It is much, much easier to impose anti-people's policies designed by the World Bank and the IMF. It is much easier to get them down the throat of our people.
Nigerian human rights attorney Femi Falana begins our series Voices from Nigeria as General Abubakar holds a world news conference and is again hailed by the West. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Reuters is reporting that Nigeria's military government has freed the Ogoni 19, who were arrested along with Ogoni rights activist and playwright Ken Sarawiwa for their opposition to Shell Oil Company 3 years ago. Sarawiwa and eight others were hung by the military junta in November 1995. The Ogoni 19 were facing the same charges as Sarawiwa and remain under the threat of hanging and without trial since 1995. Reuters is quoting a statement from Ken Sarawiwa's organization, MOSAP, the Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People, saying the activists are all receiving urgently needed medical care after surviving the dictatorship's horrid prisons. The group was originally known as the Ogoni 21, but two of their members died while in prison. Nigeria's military dictator Abdusalam Abubakar told a news conference yesterday that the case of the Ogoni 19 was being moved from a military tribunal to a, quote, civilian court. Lawmakers rejected Boris Yeltsin's candidate for prime minister yesterday for a second time, throwing Russia into even deeper political turmoil as the economy hurtles out of control. In other blows to Yeltsin, the ruble crashed again dramatically, and the central bank chairman offered to quit. Some Russians flocked to stores to buy goods before prices shoot up any higher. The vote set the stage for a final confrontation between the president and his opponents. Yeltsin must decide whether to nominate Chairman Mirden again or find another candidate. If the Duma rejects Yeltsin's choice a third time, the Constitution requires the president to dissolve parliament and call new elections within 3 months. This news from Indonesia. At least two Indonesian students were stabbed with bayonets and five were hospitalized after inhaling tear gas as security forces cleared the parliament in Jakarta of protesters. The official Antara news agency said the two students were hospitalized with bayonet wounds. More than 1,000 students massed at the legislature yesterday to demand the ouster of dictator B.J. Habibie in one of the largest rallies seen at parliament since former dictator Suharto resigned in May. Many students left as dusk fell, but about 300 remained late into the night. The top U.S. diplomat in Burma has demanded the military government free opposition members detained to prevent them from convening a parliament. This, according to a U.S. embassy spokesperson in Rangoon. Burma's National League for Democracy said today the authorities detained 110 of its members on Sunday and Monday, including 50 members who won seats in the country's last general election 8 years ago. A Southern African summit on the conflict in Laurent Kabila's Congo ended today without agreement on a ceasefire, and the country's Tutsi-led rebels vowed to fight on. Seven presidents, including three backing Kabila's 15-month-old administration and two opposing it, gathered for a second round of talks in the Zimbabwean resort of Victorian Falls today, promising an immediate end to the fighting. Meanwhile, diplomats and aid workers said today the Congolese capital Kinshasa is on the brink of a potentially explosive food crisis, with fighting blocking port supplies for more than 5 million inhabitants. The situation is aggravated by rebel disruption of the power supply on which the city's water distribution depends. Stocks of food and chemicals for water treatment are estimated to be enough for 4 days at the most. European diplomats told Reuters that President Laurent Kabila's government had asked Western countries to help set up an emergency air corridor to supply Kinshasa, but that there's no sign authorities can guarantee the safety of the aircraft. Cambodia's post-election standoff erupted in turmoil and gunfire as the country's leader, Hun Sen, ordered the arrests of his opponents and security forces fired into crowds of protesters, killing at least one. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Mary Robinson, is urging Chinese leaders to sign a key human rights treaty and pledge to improve cooperation with the Chinese government. She described her trip to China as an opportunity to begin a serious process of cooperation. And President Clinton's private lawyer has asked that Kenneth Starr, the Whitewater Independent Counsel, let him review at least a week in advance any reports submits to Congress and assign the White House is readying a defense against possible impeachment hearings. The request came with Clinton facing wrenching decisions about how to reassure Democrats as criticism of his handling of the Lewinsky episode mounts within his own party. And that's some of the news. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, and it's great to be back. A special thanks to Laura Flanders, who's the producer of the Pacifica Network News, who now goes back to her work in Washington, and you can look forward to hearing her continued work on the news each night. As many listeners to Democracy Now! Know, Democracy Now! Producer Jeremy Scahill and I were in Nigeria for the past 3 weeks. During our trip, we talked to a large cross-section of Nigerians on a wide range of issues. And over these next few weeks, we'll be bringing you many of the forbidden voices from the Nigerian resistance. As the country's new military ruler is being hailed by the West, many Nigerians are rejecting him as no different than the late dictator Sani Abacha. They call him new wine in old bottles. We thought we'd kick off our series with an interview today with a leading Nigerian human rights lawyer.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We're joined by Femi Falana. He is Deputy National Chair of JACON, which is the Joint Action Committee of Nigeria, also President of CDHR, the Committee in Defense of Human Rights, and we're sitting in his office in Lagos, Nigeria. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Yeah, thank you very much.
Actually, when we walked in, we were just talking about the U.S. government and the military regimes that are here in Nigeria successively. Can you talk about the U.S. relationship with the Nigerian military?
The U.S. relationship with the Nigerian military is extremely cordial, and that is not strange, having regards to the role of the United States in Africa and the entire Third World countries. The United States has been the principal supporter of successive military regimes in Nigeria. The only exception was that of Abacha, where there was a little problem here and there as regards his style. The U.S. was not principally opposed to the brutalities meted to Nigerians by General Sani Abacha. I think the only problem was that the then ambassador of the United States to Nigeria, Walter Carrington, did not personally accept military dictatorship, having regard to the fact that a fair and free election was conducted in Nigeria in 1993, which was criminally annulled by the military junta headed by General Ibrahim Babangida. And Nigerians, particularly in the pro-democracy movement, are almost convinced, beyond any shadow of doubt, that Mr. Carrington's appointment was not renewed because there was the need to bring in an ambassador that could assist the U.S. to do business with General Sani Abacha. In fact, President Clinton had already endorsed Abacha's illegal move to succeed himself when he said in South Africa that once the man retires from the military, there's nothing stopping him from contesting the presidential election in Nigeria. This has been our experience with the United States government.
What do you think the U.S. reason is for supporting these military regimes?
Well, generally, the United States government and a number of the countries in the West prefer military regimes here because it is much, much easier to do business with the military. It is much, much easier to impose anti-people's policies designed by the World Bank and the IMF. It is much easier to get them down the throat of our people under a military regime as opposed to civilian government, because you have to go to parliament under a democratic atmosphere to justify this type of actions. But under the military, it's just a question of issuing a decree. Once the man in the presidency is convinced, military presidency is convinced, and he's been given some bribes by Western countries, and they are also allowed to keep the loot, their loot in Western banks, for the Western countries, business as usual, because the bulk, the large chunk of the money stolen here ends up in Western banks, whereas you do not have anybody stealing money in the West and bringing it to Africa, you know. So, and from the papers, from newspaper accounts so far, General Abacha is now said to have stolen close to $10 billion. And this money is in Western banks. His predecessor, General Ibrahim Babangida, from one account, so-called dedicated account, I think it was, we had about $12.4 billion in that account. And that was all the money we made during the Gulf Oil War. It's also disappeared. And if you also find out, this money is in Western banks, including the United States. So one can understand, on this basis, that the U.S., necessarily, in its own economic interest, short-term economic interest, supports, will have to support military regimes.
And where do multinational corporations fit into that picture?
Of course, you have United States companies, and particularly Chevron, you know, Mobil and the rest of them, Shell, you know, that also operates in the U.S. They are all having a field day here. Of all oil-producing countries in Nigeria, in the world, Nigeria has the most primitive laws, environmental laws, in terms of compensation to oil-producing communities. And so Shell, Chevron, and virtually all Western multinational corporations that exploit the Nigerian oil and that are also in other, which are also in other areas of the economy, commanding heights of the economy, are having a field day here because labor is extremely cheap in Nigeria. And then all they simply do is to bribe our officials, very few in number, you know, under the military. And then you can have make a lot of money, which is not possible under a democratic, open government.
Femi Falana is our guest. He is the president of the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights in Lagos, Nigeria, well-known human rights activist and lawyer in this country. We're sitting in his offices in Lagos. What about Abubakar? What about the current military dictator? Both the U.S. relationship with him, but also where you see this country going right now. He is talking about a transition to democracy. The U.S. is celebrating that. The oil corporations are taking out ads saying to support that. Where do you stand on that?
The U.S. will celebrate any transition program. That of General Babangida was celebrated. That of Abacha was celebrated. In the case of Abubakar, I understand he had some of his military training in the United States. He has friends in the United States military. The United States government is very happy with him. And the United States, I understand for President Clinton, Abubakar is a very pleasant gentleman. In fact, they say that he's not political, which is not acceptable in Nigeria, because he has been in the highest ruling body since 1988, and I'm talking of the former Provisional Ruling Council, former National Defense and Security Council, as well as the Provisional Ruling Council. And that is the executive arm of government, as well as the legislative arm of government under a military regime. To therefore say that such a man is neutral politically or apolitical, I think is a misuse of word or simple mischief. And I think the U.S. is mounting this kind of misleading campaign to give the impression that the man in Abuja, General Abubakar, is committed towards transiting to democracy, towards getting Nigeria to the democratic approach to development. But we do know that General Abubakar has been part and parcel of the colossal wastage of the last 13 years under General Babangida and Abacha, which have led the country to nowhere. And that is why Nigerians believe very seriously that there is no new game in town. Most Nigerians are either apathetic or just feel we've seen it before. We've heard it all over again. So there's nothing new in town. And so we are not very confident that General Abubakar can lead the country to democracy.
You're the Deputy National Chair of JACON, the Joint Action Committee of Nigeria. Where do you stand then in this transition? Do you participate? Do you urge parties to form and to run candidates to transform to civilian rule in February?
No, we are totally opposed to General Abubakar's transition program because we believe very strongly that it is not going to lead the country to genuine democracy. I understand you've been here past few days, and I doubt whether you have seen signs that the country is transiting to democracy, because democracy is not just about conducting elections. It is a life. It is a culture. We've got to live it, live through democratic process. You've got to democratize the society. You've got to open up you've got to expand the democratic space. And that is not on the ground. As a lawyer, I can tell you that there are over 100 court orders that are being disobeyed by government and its departments today in Nigeria. So, I mean, not to talk of Abacha's deputy, General Oladipo Deya, and others who were convicted last December. It was General Abubakar that announced the phantom coup on December 21 last year. It was General Abubakar that set up the tribunal that tried them. And evidence abounds that there was no coup, that it was a setup to eliminate Deya so that General Abubakar can come on board when Abacha eventually died, because it was clear Abacha would die. So, in fact, you have a situation in Nigeria today where JACON has said two fundamental demands were made by JACON. One, that a government of national unity be put in place, in which the six geopolitical zones in the country will elect their representatives. Each of these zones will then have his delegate in Abuja that will form a collegiate presidency. They will appoint a chairman or rotate the chairmanship amongst themselves. It is that government of national unity that will bring into being a sovereign national conference where all the fundamental problems confronting the country will be discussed. General Abubakar says, no, I don't want a government of national unity. I am going to put in place a federal cabinet that will reflect all the geopolitical zones in the country. But the cabinet he announced last week, I can tell you by that cabinet, he has shown himself as a shameless defender of the status quo. As a matter of fact, we have never had this so bad before in terms of bringing out a cabinet where the key ministries in the country are reserved to a section where the head of state comes from. Today, from that cabinet, of course, the head of state is from the northern part of the country. He has now taken over the ministries of defense and petroleum. A northerner is the minister of defense. A northerner is the attorney general and minister of justice. A northerner is the minister of internal affairs. A northerner is the minister of works and housing. A northerner is the minister of federal capital territory. And so on and so forth. So, those who are complaining of marginalization in the southern part of the country have been asked to satisfy themselves with the ministries of information, national planning, a country that has no plan, and so on and so forth, youth and sport. So, you now see a general that is, in fact, exacerbating the ethnic crisis in the country. And that is what is going on.
You're listening to Femi Falana, Deputy National Chair of JACON, the Joint Action Committee on Nigeria, and head of the CDHR, Committee for the Defense of Human Rights, one of the Nigerian leading human rights lawyers and leading critic of the country's new military ruler, Abdusalam Abubakar. We'll be back with him in just a minute on our special series beginning today as we just returned from Nigeria on the Forbidden Voices of the Resistance. Stay with us. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. The music during the break, young people from the Pan-African Youth Movement at a political rally in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. As we continue with Femi Falana, Deputy National Chair of JACON, the Joint Action Committee on Nigeria. Again, the latest news, Reuters Newswire reporting that the Ogoni 19 have been released. They were arrested along with Ken Sarawiwa, charged with the same crimes. He was executed along with eight others, and they have remained in jail. But news now that they have been released. Femi Falana, one of their attorneys. We continue with his discussion of a sovereign national conference. I spoke to him 2 weeks ago in Lagos, Nigeria.
You talk about a sovereign national conference.
No, a sovereign national conference. A sovereign national conference where the problems of the country will be discussed, including the military and military incursion into the body politics. And what General Abubakar is simply saying is, we don't want a conference. Although General Abacha's transition program is discredited, is illegitimate, should be discarded. However, a part of it, the fundamental aspect of it, of that destruction, will now be used as a basis to moving the country forward. And that is the draft, the 1995 draft constitution. It's going to be imposed on Nigerians for us to debate its contents. After that debate, the Provisional Ruling Council, headed by General Abubakar, will now sit and vet it. After vetting it, they will enact it into a law. And that will become the Constitution of Nigeria. Of course, that cannot be the Constitution of Nigeria, because a constitution that will have come out of the Sovereign National Conference will be higher than everybody and all institutions in Nigeria. But the one General Abubakar is planning to give us will be vetted by the Provisional Ruling Council. How do you then expect the military later to respect a constitution over which they believe, they can rough shore? So, in other words, the military will be higher than the constitution. And so you cannot expect obedience to the constitution from the military. And what is more, General Abubakar and his colleagues in government now are going to retire in May next year if they conduct the election and hand over power. So all the undertakings he's making, all his promises he's giving that they will hand over power in May, cannot put an end to military rule in Nigeria, because he's going to retire. His own colleagues are going to retire, but their boys are still in the barracks. Who are going to come out in the next 3 or 6 months after they might have handed over power to overthrow the next government? And that is the point General Babangida, that was the confession he made when he spoke to the New York Times, that Moshood Abiola won the 1993 election, but at the point of handing over, a few generals from the northern part of the country put a gun on his neck and said, if you handed over to this man, we'll kill you. So what stopped the same generals that are still very much around from killing the next president of Nigeria? And you're not going to have an echo monk coming here to remove the president of Nigeria, or the military president, as you had in Kuruma's Sierra Leone, because Nigeria, the commander-in-chief of the armed forces is the commander-in-chief of ECOMOG forces. So these are, so what General Abubakar is doing, what the U.S. is doing through General Abubakar is to postpone the evil day, because the evil day is going to come surely and certainly.
This program, Democracy Now!, is a national grassroots show. Activists listen to it around the country. They're very interested in what the pro-democracy movement here in Nigeria wants them to do in the United States.
What we want the pro-democracy movement and the NGOs in the West, particularly in the United States, to do for us is to take on the Clinton administration for its role, despicable role, in the circumstances surrounding the mysterious death of Chief Moshood Abiola, the winner of the June 12th mandate election in Nigeria. It is generally believed by Nigerians that Chief Abiola was poisoned, having regard to the fact that he was said to have taken tea when Mr. Thomas Pickering and others were discussing with him. And the very embarrassing manner in which Mr. Pickering and members of the delegation became or were made to be international witnesses to that diabolical act has fueled suspicions in Nigeria. Because rather than allow the Nigerian government to explain the circumstances surrounding the death of Chief Abiola, it was Pickering and others. Was speaking to CNN, BBC, and the rest of them. And hence, I made an order for their arrest because they were primary suspects.
Say that again?
I did call for the arrest of Mr. Pickering and others who were with Chief Abiola when he died because, in law, they remain the primary suspects as far as what we regard as cold murder of Chief Abiola is concerned. And before autopsy was conducted, the United States president, in a very embarrassing manner, which will never be tolerated in the United States, did say that Chief Abiola died of natural causes. And so when it was therefore clear that pathologists that were brought from Western countries to conduct the autopsy came here to cover up. This is not propaganda, because I am a lawyer. I have studied the autopsy report over and over again. I can tell you that report will be thrown out as a cause of Chief Abiola in any court of law, because they say the experts are claiming, in fact, about three of them came from the U.S. Army, as you are aware. They claim that Chief Abiola had a problem with his heart. That on the one hand, he had a long-standing disease of the heart. For them, they identify an enlargement of the heart, which could be suggestive of hypertension. The other one, that there was a blockage of the main coronary artery. What blocked it? What enlarged the heart? They were not prepared to let the world know. Whereas as at 1994, now on possibility of poisoning, they said they listened to those who witnessed Chief Abiola die, that's Pickering and others. And so from the evidence, poisoning is ruled out. That is not scientific. That is guesswork, voodooism. But what is more embarrassing is the fact that Chief Abiola was kept in a solitary confinement for 4 good years. No access to the sun, no physical exercise. Whereas as of 1994, medical examinations conducted on his body by private medical practitioners as well as government doctors suggested that the man could die in detention if he was not given medical treatment that was not available in the country. He had to be flown out for treatment. When the medical, and that in the interim, as of 94, he should be allowed physical exercise to allow for free flow of his blood. The man was denied physical exercise for 4 years. So it was therefore rational that even, it was therefore logical, forget poisoning for a moment, it was therefore logical that because he was not allowed to exercise his body, there was blockage of the heart. But what the expert said, the autopsy expert, is that we are not concerned, our brief does not cover medical neglect, but I died naturally. So if somebody died due to medical neglect and you say he died naturally, that can never be accepted in a court of law. Jacon has already been contacted by some members of the family, and we intend to file an action in court very soon, challenging the murder of Chief Abiola.
We saw a cryptic reference yesterday in PM News to something about the CIA and the death of Mashood Abiola.
The Nigerian Tribune suggesting that the CIA had a hand in the death of Chief Abiola. I think it's believable in the sense that the Western countries, particularly the U.S., never felt comfortable with Chief Abiola. They thought, the general thinking was that he was too intelligent for a third world country, and two of his programs were going to challenge the moral integrity of Western countries. He launched a campaign for reparations for the slave trade, that lasted about 4 or 5 centuries. That was never going to be taken in good faith by Western countries.
And what was he specifically calling for?
He was going to ask for reparation, huge compensations for African countries where slaves were captured and taken to develop Western countries. The other one was his own political manifesto titled Welfare to Poverty. It was a complete repudiation of IMF-imposed structural adjustment program. That, again, was never accepted by Western countries. And I think the Fed and Abiola presidency will be dangerous for the interests of the West.
Femi Falana is our guest, Deputy National Chair of JACON, the Joint Action Committee on Nigeria. Again, speaking to him in his law offices in Lagos, Nigeria. Femi Falana, a lot of people have talked about the breakup of Nigeria. Would you like to see that?
No, I don't want Nigeria to break up. But it must be a marriage of convenience. And that is why we need to go to a sovereign national conference and redefine the basis of our continued existence as a corporate entity. But those who say, no, we're not going to meet, will sit on you and maintain the status quo. I only postpone it the evil day. If they don't want it peacefully, you are going to have it violently. And at that stage, some of us are going to be rendered irrelevant. There are boys who tell us, we're not going to join you on the street to protest against the military or injustice. We're going to the bush if they are not going to allow this country.
Do you see
structured and reorganized along the lines of social justice?
Do you see an armed struggle happening in this country?
It is not impossible. It's not impossible. In fact, it has become, somebody, we had a program 2 days ago where we tried to organize the 61st posthumous body of Chief Mashood Abiola. One of the best labor leaders the country has produced, Mr. Frank Okori, made it clear publicly that his only regret was that he never trained in armed struggle. But that next time he's going to lead a struggle in this country, he's going to be armed. So it is no longer a hidden matter. As a matter of fact, these politicians are even calling for regionalization of the army, of the military, which is a way of saying that the army that we have presently is a northern army. It's an army of northern Nigeria. And therefore, those who are asking for their own armies are simply saying, we want to have our own armies in our own areas. So that if our own man wins the election, as in the case with Abiola, a set of northern generals cannot overthrow him or cannot deny him his right to occupy his position. Because generals from some other parts of the country could also have said, no, We're not going to allow you. You can't do this on behalf of the Nigerian army. So you see a country that is in such a dangerous situation. As you know, there's nowhere in the world where every region has its own army. But when a country gets to that stage, I would think those who are in charge should be concerned and begin to find out what do we do to prevent a Holocaust that is inevitable.
So you are not for regional armies, or are you?
No, I'm not for regional armies. We are for military training for all Nigerians. You know, and that is what, in fact, their draft constitution, 1995 draft constitution, has provided for under section 198. But I understand that I moved to expunge that part of the constitution. It allows for military training for all Nigerians, and if you can give military training to all Nigerians, particularly able-bodied people, why do you need a standing army of 100,000 people? So all what would they need is to demobilize and reduce significantly our standing army that is jobless, that has nothing doing other than plot and plan coups. So what would they be asking for? It's a standing army of about, at most, 15,000 troops, 10,000 soldiers, members of the army, 3,000 Air Force men, and 2,000 naval men. If there is a war, and we have to go out to defend Nigeria, or you want to go for ECOMOG or whatever, we can always ask them to go and do that kind of thing. And if we have to do anything, we can always ask people to report. Those who are already trained can always be asked, you know, to report for service. Well, as long as you have, and the civil society can deal with such a standing army if they attempt to go to the radio to overthrow the government. But as long as you have this army, it is not easy.
We're talking.
U.S. cannot even send Marines to overthrow a government in Abuja. It will lead to a world war. So, it is not, and Africa cannot contain refugees from Nigeria who overrun the entire West African sub-region to South Africa. You know? And we also hope the Western countries will appreciate the dilemma we are in. All these problems about drug abuse, trafficking in drugs and the rest of them. Immigration problems in Western countries are part and pass off the problems on our hands. So if you make our country difficult for us to stay in, we'll go and create problems in your own country. That is what is going on. Up to now, we do not consume drugs in Nigeria. Nigeria is not a consuming nation. It's only a transit, you know, nation. Okay? And if the West, particularly the U.S., is serious about curbing and reducing some of these problems, you also must allow us to have political stability. And the only way we can do that is to ensure that we send the military packing completely. But this whole business of having the military for 4 years or 12 years, you have a civilian government for 4 years, and then the military comes back for 50 years, is not going to help the country.
Femi Falana is our guest. He is Deputy National Chair of JACON, the Joint Action Committee on Nigeria, speaking in his offices in Lagos, Nigeria. Democracy Now! Just having returned from Africa's largest country. We'll be back with him in just a minute.
Emancipation! Africa! Determination leads to success. Comrade Gaskill, never you worry. Determination leads to success.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, and as the dictator of Nigeria, Abdusalam Abubakar, held a world news conference yesterday, we bring you, in this first of a series of forbidden voices of the resistance from Nigeria, Femi Falana, Deputy National Chair of JACON, the Joint Action Committee on Nigeria.
Why does the South need the North at all? It's clear why the North needs the South. The South produces the wealth of this nation in its oil. And so the North is very repressive toward the South, and they run the country. Why doesn't the South simply secede? They've got the resources. They've got the education. They've got everything they need. Isn't this what the North is so afraid of? And what do you think is the merit of a confederated Nigeria, of a Nigeria that includes the North?
Nigeria today remains the largest concentration of black people all over the world. If our resources are well harnessed, I think we should be competing favorably with the United States government. United States, of all the countries in the world. We have the human and natural resources in abundance. Many of our resources are yet untapped. Yet, Nigeria is the 13th poorest country in the world today. So, such paradoxes for us are a cause for concern. We believe if the country is well organized and we have genuine federalism, in which each region or each state can be allowed to develop at its own pace. I'm very convinced that the sky is our limit. But a situation whereby oil is produced in Ogoniland or in the Niger Delta, all the money is taken to Abuja. From that money, you repress the people, you occupy their land, kill their best sons and daughters, put the rest in jail, cannot continue for too long. If those who are sitting on Nigeria do not allow justice and fair play, I can assure you, it can never be unity at all costs. And like one of your former presidents said, I think it was Abraham Lincoln, that those who make peaceful change impossible, make violent revolution inevitable.
So why hasn't there been a mass mobilization like the African National Congress, both in civilian mobilization that was peaceful and an armed wing? Why hasn't that happened in Nigeria when you look at the level of repression?
In Nigeria, the level of repression became very critical in the last 10 years or thereabout. We've always had the hope, we've always believed that this crisis can be managed peacefully. For instance, after you have had the military rule for 13 years in 1979, we had a handing over from the military to a democratic government, and we all thought we could use that opportunity to rebuild the country. Of course, we had the civilian government for 4 years before the military came back. And since 1984 January, we've been in this crisis. Again, we thought by 1993, Shifabiola's election was a collective expression and desire of the Nigerian people to move, to join the rest of the world along the democratic process. But the military canceled the election. And of course, we have been dismissed. I think it is only in the last couple of years or thereabout, particularly in the dying days of Abacha, that quite a number of Nigerians began to think of other options. And if you must recall, even in the South African situation, the ANC was born in 1912, in fact, as the first major political party in Africa. Yet, the question of violence was not on the agenda until 1962 or thereabout. So, it is not generally organizations do not put violence before them as a first priority. It is when all peaceful options have failed that you might then be forced to go violent. And like Amilcar Cabral said, violence as a weapon of struggle should be the very last resort, because once you overthrow a violent government violently, there is no end to it. And I'm sure that is what Kabila is getting to appreciate. That violence itself begets violence. So that is why most Nigerians are fed. Let us continue to make our demands peacefully and give the oppressors of our people a long rope to tie themselves. But like in every human endeavor, there's a limit to endurance. And if you must know, the level of poverty in the northern part of Nigeria is amazing. In fact, much more deep than what you call poverty here. And I've been detained quite a number of times in the north. I've traveled all over the country. And I do know, without any fear of contradiction, that what you call poverty in the southern part of the country is a tip of the iceberg compared with what you have in the north. Whereas now we're talking of crisis in education. People want to go to school. There's no accommodation. In the north, most of the youths are either on the street as beggars or they are in jailhouses. So it is as bad. And those who are afraid of a conference, those who are afraid of open conference, want to maintain the status quo. And that is why you must understand the Jerry Ganas, the Abubakars and others.
And yet you have this week Abubakar going to South Africa and South African President Nelson Mandela hailing him as the man to lead Nigeria into democracy.
Well, Mandela is an old man. He's about 80 years. So one can understand that he is also anxious to see democracy in Nigeria before his death. I think one can understand his basis of his sentiments, you know, his hopes. But we hope those hopes will not be dashed very soon.
So what is going to happen now? Realistically, you have the leader saying there will not be a sovereign national conference. There will be elections in February. He says, at this point, what specifically is going to happen? What are the pro-democracy forces, your coalition, JACON, the Joint Action Committee of Nigeria, what are you going to be doing?
Well, first, we are going to intensify the campaign to have the democratic space open up in Nigeria. Secondly, we're going to continue to demand for the release of all Nigerians who are in prison custody without any justification in law and in fact. Thirdly, we're going to mount a massive campaign against those obnoxious laws and anti-democratic decrees that make it impossible for a country to genuinely transit to democracy. One of them is the State Security Detention of Persons Decree that allows the Chief of General Staff of General Abubakar and his Inspector General of Police to arrest and detain any Nigerian indefinitely without giving any reason anywhere. Another decree we intend to challenge very soon is the Treason and Other Offenses Decree number 29 of 1993 that prescribes the death penalty for anybody who makes a demand calling for a breakup or restructuring of the country. There's a decree like that on the ground. And of course, JACON is going to mobilize Nigerians to boycott General Abubakar's transition program because it will not lead to genuine democracy. And even if they wobble on, if Abubakar wobbles on and conducts an election, we are saying the crisis in Nigeria transcends the mere holding of elections. There are fundamental problems. The country's wealth has been looted. And yet we are said to be owing Western countries. And we are going to mount a campaign very soon against Western countries, we're going to mobilize non-governmental organizations in the West to hold their countries responsible for some of the crises here. And one of the demands we intend to put across is that the London and Paris clubs, the London and Paris clubs, as well as the World Bank, IMF, and other institutions that claim that we are owing them, should take efforts to retrieve, to assist us to retrieve our stolen wealth so that we can pay their debts through such stolen wealth. So since this money is lodged in their bank, they could simply convert the money and then leave us alone to develop. Okay? Of course, we're also going to fight IMF and World Bank that continue to insist that there are too many educated people in Nigeria. That's the position of World Bank. And therefore, the government has no business funding education. We're going to fight IMF that is insisting and is asking our government to privatize completely. There is no full privatization in any part of Western country. You Americans, you know today that no American will drop out of school because he's not able to pay. If he's able to read, there are opportunities. We want to ensure that such opportunities exist in our country. We have no social security. And that also accounts for stealing and looting and corruption. Because if you are working for government, you believe that if you do not steal enough to take care of yourself and your family when you are retired, you are going to become a beggar. So these are areas we're going to have a campaign around. All those who have stolen our wealth, their properties in the West, should be confiscated. Western banks should release our money to us. I mean, if you have somebody like Abacha who was a public officer, it was clear to everybody there's no way you can justify moving $750 million from a bank, Midland Bank in the US, I mean Britain, and taking it to Brazil to lodge there. I mean, these are things that you cannot justify. It cannot happen in the world. You call it money laundering.
I have two last questions. One is, you represent a lot of the media houses.
Yes.
Can you explain what the decrees against the media that remain are right now? You mentioned the treason decree. Is there also a decree that says that if the media reports on
the decrees, all the decrees that militate against press freedom in Nigeria are still very firmly in place. You have the Official Secrets Act of 1962, as amended, which prescribes 14 years imprisonment for anybody who publishes what is classified as secret by government. And we're not talking of a secret, we're not talking of security matters. Anything marked secret by any idiot in government cannot be published. And for us, that offends our freedom of expression, freedom to be informed, you know, and the whole basis of accountability. If government cannot be held responsible, if we do not know what is going on in government, how do you hold government accountable? So that law is there. You also have laws about registration of newspapers, all sort of decrees. You have detention decree right there. You have confiscation decree that allows the government, section decree 35 of 1993, that allows the head of state, the president, the military president, to confiscate any newspaper or magazine. Of course, you have Decree 12 of 1994 that allows the government to do anything. Under those powers, they've been proscribing newspapers and magazines, you know, still detaining some journalists up to now. So there are so many decrees that militate against press freedom.
the decree that allows for the confiscation of the newspaper, you mean taking of the newspaper or of the entire printing press and the properties? Or closing the newspaper?
All. All. Once, for instance, the decree allows the government, allows the head of state, to issue an order saying that this week's edition of the news magazine or the Temple newspaper should be confiscated. And so what security agents would do is to go to the production center, and as soon as you are packaging the newspapers for distribution or for circulation, security men will swoop on you and take them away. If they proscribe the newspaper, they are also allowed to occupy the premises, kind of military occupation, for as long as possible. All these laws are still firmly in place, and Western countries, the United States government, is not bothered. Election. And the next government will inherit these laws. So, and if you are going to have democracy, you must remove these inhibitions first. Then we can see genuine commitment. And they said they have an independent electoral body. All the members were appointed by the PRC, Provisional Ruling Council.
Which was chosen by who?
I beg your pardon?
Which was, the members of which are chosen by whom?
By the Provisional Ruling Council of General Abubakar. So that cannot be said to be independent. Whereas if you had asked credible organizations in the society, like professional bodies, the Nigerian Medical Association, the Nigerian Bar Association, labor unions, academic staff unions, the youth bodies, please nominate one candidate each for us to constitute an electoral body. Then you can talk of independence. But when the PRCs of 23 members sat down and decided to pick and choose their friends and surrogates and impose them on us as an electoral body, and you say it's independent, independent of whom?
Last question. How many times have you been detained?
Frankly speaking, I have not sat down. I've lost count, but not less than 15 times.
So what keeps you going, Femi Falana?
I'm optimistic that we're going to win the struggle for justice, the struggle for democracy, the struggle for human rights and for rule of law in our country. That hope keeps me going. And the commitment of the ordinary people of our country to join the struggle for change. And I'm very sure we're going to write the obituaries of all our dictators.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good night.
Femi Falana, Deputy National Chair of JACON, the Joint Action Committee on Nigeria, and head of the CDHR, Committee for the Defense of Human Rights, speaking from Lagos, Nigeria. As the beginning of our Voices from the Nigerian Resistance series, having just returned from a three-week trip to Nigeria. Coming up on Democracy Now!, leading Nigerian environmental rights activist Oronto Douglas. Also, many have heard about the role of Shell Oil in Nigeria, the execution of Ken Saro-Wiwa, and now we just reported today the release of the Goni 19, who have been in prison for more than 3 years. Well, Democracy Now! Will document the role of San Francisco oil giant Chevron in the killing of two Nigerian activists several months ago. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can call the archives at 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Democracy Now! Is produced by Jeremy Scahill. Errol Maitland is our technical director. Our email address, democracy@pacifica.org. And today we go out with the song of Fela, Nigerian primo artist and singer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Zombie never go stop unless you tell them to stop. Zombie never go turn unless you tell them.